notice anything different there, folks. Good morning and welcome to WNHH Radio's High Haven, a program about everything Jewish in our community. You are just listening to a song you hear every day at this hour on High Haven and Dateline New Haven. It's called Eliyahu HaNavi from the Afro-Semitic Experience, but it's sounding a little different this morning. Because the man co-responsible for that group's existence, who made that recording 20 years ago, is in our studio right now playing along with it live, jamming with his old self in time travel and time warp. Boy, do we have a great show for you planned today. We have a familiar face and sound in the studio today. It belongs to David Chevin, co-founder of the Afro-Semitic Experience, my favorite number one Connecticut group and maybe group anywhere, whose music begins and ends this hour every day in WNHH. He's the founder of New Haven Capella and other klezmer and Jewish music ensembles. And he's also the father of the second person in the studio today whom we want to introduce you to. His name is Noah Chevin. And we're hoping right, Noah, that some people on your Facebook feed are following along with us here on Facebook Live. All right. They're here. Dad and son are teaming up Wednesday night. That's tonight at Best Video in Hamden, or as we call it, the Best Video, for an evening of electro-acoustic improvisations. So this is a father-son team. One of our veterans of the New Haven music scene for decades, and SCSU, Southern Connecticut State University music professor David Chevin, and his son Noah, the next generation. They've been jamming for years, and tonight they're going to be performing together, just the two of them, with both acoustic instruments and some electronica that Noah's been mastering, and we're going to hear about that as well. It's all very interesting. Well, welcome, Chevins. So nice to have you guys in the studio.
Good to be here. Thanks for having us, Paul.
Absolutely.
So there you have it. Evidence that they're here. Okay, guys. So 8 o'clock tonight, Best Video, Whitney Avenue. We got a lot to talk about. But before we talk, let's get a sample of some of what you're going to play tonight.
Thank you.
That's something like it.
Whoa. Now that was mind-blowing. You are listening to David Chevin and son Noah Chevin performing on WNHH Radio's High Haven. And they just gave you a taste of what you're going to hear tonight, Wednesday night, at Best Video on Windy Avenue, right over the line in Hamden, starting at 8 o'clock. Father and son duo player. Now tell me about that. You had David playing his bass. You had son Noah first playing the computer, doing electronica mixed in, and then adding live trumpet. What was the basis of that song, guys? And David, you could take the big mic up top if you want. You can leave that other one in place. Yeah, we have. Yeah, you can.
No, oh. That one's actually going in my computer.
Oh, okay, but, okay, you can.
Yeah, I can speak on it quickly, and then he can chime in. I think with that one in particular, that was about a bass unaccompanied, or a bass unprocessed, accompanied by a processed trumpet. A lot of times when I put the trumpet into the computer and play it back, I refer to that as processing. So
in other words, while your father was playing, now that was improvisation. Dave, was that a particular tune you start with theme and variation, or you just even improvise the theme?
Well, a lot of times Noah and I don't specifically work out tunes like in the conventional sense of, you know, like there's a melody to Eliyahu, but we talk more in terms of different kinds of parameters that we're going to explore. So in that one, as Noah just said, what we decided very quickly in advance is that I would play without Noah doing anything to it, but then what he would do while I was playing would be to use both processed and unprocessed trumpet.
And I want to get the processed trumpet in a minute, but tell me what you started playing, David.
So this goes back to some of the things that I teach. And so it's always good if you actually practice what you teach and not just, you know, teach it and then do something else. And so the most basic thing I do as a musician all the time, but I'm very intentional about it and very, very focused about it, is the idea that I'm making sound. So my first thought when I was listening to what was coming out is, what sounds that I make would work really well with the sounds that I'm hearing, and how do I want to help shape the unfolding of the sound through the choices that I make?
Did you have a theme?
Or
were you improvising the theme?
Well, the music I was playing was completely improvised, but to some degree it was reactive as well as active.
So, what does that mean?
So that means as I heard what was coming through my headphones, I recognized that there were melodic shapes that were emerging that I either had to play along with, negate, or accompany. Play over.
You talked about parameters, David. Was that in a key? Was that saying a time signature, a key? When you talk, what kind of parameters are you working on, Noah?
Well,
when you do that,
Noah can chime in here.
Yeah, I would say that, you know, a certain point when you've played the keys and you played the scales, a certain point where you just want to react to the frequencies, because, you know, every note in a scale has a corresponding frequency and range of frequencies too. So I think we're more thinking in a terms of spectrality, you know, the whole range of what we're hearing. So it's almost more organic than...
Was that in a key? Was that song
no,
in a key?
No.
Well, it wasn't, but then conversely, it kind of was,
yeah,
in the sense that, there was a moment where I realized that there were two possible key areas that were kind of unfolding as we were playing, and one of those was G and the other was D.
Yeah.
And
So do you play an A sharp or an A natural in
well,
that one?
Well, no, but at a certain point...
It doesn't matter.
But at a certain point, I really knew that the note that I absolutely had to play to make things consonant and to make things develop in the way that it seemed like they could go was to hit some Fs and Ds.
F sharps, right?
F naturals.
F naturals when you're playing the keys of G and D. Well, I guess that's a seventh, a regular seventh, yeah.
So that's also the jazz training, which is to know what notes inside and outside of a key area are going to be most beneficial to you. Mm-hmm. So the G that I'm referring to was probably more of a G minor or a G mixolydian, and so the F natural just worked really
sweetly. And also,
if
you're playing blues scale, you got the F natural too, right?
That is true, yes.
So, Noah, you were then adding processed trumpet. Does that mean that's trumpet music you've played in advance? Because you didn't have the trumpet to your mouth.
the first sound was, and then following that, accompanying sounds and changing sounds in the, you know, electronic accompaniment that was recorded. So there's a little bit of pre-recording and there's a little bit of recording in
real
time.
What do you pre-record? Like what kind of stuff?
For this sound in particular, I just played a single note into the microphone and let it loop.
But you didn't blow it in your trumpet.
No, I did. I did. That was a trumpet note, actually.
Blown that trumpet show before you came here.
Yeah, I just, you know, I wanted something good to go. I wanted something that I knew was going to sound good. I think other instances I might, you know, play something in front of people and then let it go. But, you know, when you're...
See, I'm so old school, Noah. I'm back from the 70s, 80s. Yeah. So I'm trying to figure out how this works. I notice people all the time with computers. I'm wondering how it works. So before you came here, you have certain recordings of trumpet notes you've blown and then played around with electronically?
Actually, to speak about more what I came in with, it's actually a template of tools. So I have, you know, a few audio tracks. And, you know, if you were thinking about working with an old analog four-track recorder, you can think about each of those tracks as just an input. And, you know, that might have an EQ processing on it back in the day. But I've got all these different plugins, all these different effects in there. So I have stuff that's going to allow me to record and change pitch. I have stuff that's going to allow me to record, add, you know, echo, delay. So I have a pretty extensive toolkit in front of me. So when specifically this instance, you know, I'm using processing techniques that I'm familiar with, similar in the way that you would, you know.
But I mean, that process includes, again, I'm ignorant here.
Yeah.
When you've blown the note and you've recorded it, do you then shape it or reshape it with those tools? Like,
definitely.
What do you do with it? What kind of reshaping?
So for the first sound, there's this drone that entered, and basically I had a trumpet note that I blew in.
Note was it?
Oh, I forget. I don't really think about that, honestly.
It'll fit in any key. If he's playing B flat or G minor, it's going to fit.
You know, I think it may actually be. It's just not the way I think about it. Yeah, it's
key.
It's not the approach. You know, like there's maybe a scale and like a note group that I'm going to use, but like in an instance like that, I think I'm thinking about too much else. You know, there's too many other things in front of me.
So you're also making a choice, and it's so interesting about the modern musician. You're making a choice of what am I going to do with the machine and what am I going to do with playing live? And I guess that's true for all instruments, even going back to my day. I mean, you have the electric guitarist who has the wah-wah pedal, and then it started getting mixed up with fancier machines that would bend and shape the whole sound of the guitar. So this morning and then tonight, what you're doing, you listen to your dad play. Then you pulled up some notes that you had shaped and pre-recorded. Then you picked up your trumpet. What made you decide to pick up your trumpet at that point?
I don't know. I mean, I think about it, I think on emotional terms sometimes, sometimes in terms of energy. But I think, you know, as my father said, reactive listening, you know, when you're hearing something and you feel like you have something to say, you feel like you have something to add, that's when you do it.
And this is improvisational music.
Absolutely.
And that's one aspect of jazz, but you know how you define this music, you know, jazz musicians like Anthony Davis would say, well, why aren't you calling my music classical? What's the difference at some point when you're composing like that? How would you classify this music?
I'd avoid for as long as possible classifying it.
Okay, and then
family music. Yeah, it's family music. This is, you know,
and
my
do you think
father.
This has to do with your father and son?
Yeah.
I noticed a picture on the page for tonight's event that showed you sitting in your dad's lap when you were a baby at the piano. Have you guys been communicating musically since you were a baby? Is that part of what we're hearing in this music now, a result of a communication between father and son that's gone on for 20 years?
Absolutely, yes. Yeah, absolutely. You know?
So when you're going to play this music, when you play tonight, have you practiced anything? Or are you just going to do what you did now where dad just starts laying down a beat, laying down a groove, and you just jump in?
No. We got a list. You know, we've maybe done, in this current iteration, maybe a number of rehearsals.
So how do you rehearse? I mean, do you have a theme that you rehearse?
We do. We actually... Yeah. But again, So just as with tune-based music, you might say, okay, we have a chord progression, we have a melody, you know, we have a time feel. When you're improvising, and when you're improvising with someone who you know as well as I know Noah, and as well as he knows me, you can just sort of talk about a scenario. And in that sense, I don't want to say it's the same as comedy improvisation. You know, give me a scene, and then we'll see how it acts out.
No,
but there's a degree to which we say, okay, let's work within these parameters, or let's have no parameters, or let's establish that you know, we're going to work within a particular key area. In other words, we set just a few things to give us some borders, and then we try to see what can happen within those borders and how freely we can express ourselves with one another. So I was thinking about what you were saying, and there's a degree to which all music making is communicative. I mean, it's all communication, emotional, spiritual. This kind of improvisation is very specifically communication between the number of people who are involved. And in communication and music making, and I liked some of the questions you were asking, Paul, to Noah, in communication, so much of it isn't just what you have to say, but how well and how thoughtfully you listen to what's being said and respond to it.
That sounds great. And we hear from Facebook Live listeners, Nate Goldsmith writes in, brilliant. Eastman Stretch Presser says, Super Max. Max Lyman says, likewise. And they and others are listening to David Chevin and Noah Chevin. David's the co-founder of the Afro-Semitic Experience and the founder of the New Haven Capella and other klezmer and Jewish music ensembles. And we're going to talk about the Jewish roots, if any, of this collaboration in a little while. And his son, Noah, who's been playing music with him all his life. And you get to watch them live Wednesday night, tonight, at Best Video, the Best Video on Whitney Avenue, starting at 8 o'clock. Now, even though this is such improvised music, you said you do practice, you do have some basic parameters set. Can you play us another tune now that you're going to play tonight in some form, although I assume it's going to sound different from what's at the
sure.
concert?
Yeah. Okay, so Noah and I actually both instinctively went for the same thing in terms of what we were thinking we would play. So to give you an example of what I mean by something that we've practiced and yet something that we haven't, we're going to play what we call our drone piece.
The D word, yeah.
The drone piece?
The drone piece.
It's amazing
not the kinds that fly over your head.
Oh, it's not. It's droning on, because I was going to say all technology seems to come full circle, but I guess not. Droning is an old tradition.
Dealer.
So Noah Dealer. And David Chevin, father and son, tonight at Best Video, and here's a taste of what you're going to hear.
Thank you.
That's it.
All right. Wow. I loved watching the end of that song, watching you guys communicating. And when you knew it was coming to the climax and father and son jumped right in. You're listening to father and son, David Chevin and Noah Chevin, on WNHH Radio's High Haven program, broadcast at 103.5 FM, live streamed at newhavenindependent.org. We got a couple hundred folks on Facebook Live joining us. And you're going to be able to hear that music and watch it yourself tonight, Wednesday night, 8 p.m., at Best Video on Whitney Avenue in Hampton. Does that have its name, that song?
Not that time around. I don't know. No. It's, well, I mean, we think of it as a specific, like, action between us. That it's like a droning action, but that, you know, I'm not trying to, like, ascribe imagery to it or anything like that, you know.
You'll leave that up to the viewer and the listener.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's enough color in there, you know.
Little synesthesia there. Yeah. So, you know what I'm interested in? So you guys, as I said, Noah, you've been playing music with your dad all your life. When did that start in earnest? When did you start being very aware that your father was a musician and a Jewish musician? And I'm wondering how relevant that is or isn't, and a jazz musician. At what point did you jump in?
I think in many ways that was something like I've always been aware of, because as much as like watching him be a musician himself, watching, you know, the music that he showed me, and just this ongoing musical experience in my childhood, just, you know, being at lessons and coming to these concerts. You know, when I think about like my childhood and him as a musician, I do think about him as a Jewish musician, but I think about some like earlier projects in different places, you know, different.
So like when you were 3 years old, were you listening to Thelonious Monk?
I don't know what was being played, honestly. Like
Was it in the house, David? Were the other kids playing Rafi? Was he like toddling around to Thelonious Monk?
Yeah, there was not much classic rock in our house, I have to admit.
Noah
was exposed to whatever whim my ears were trained on at the moment. And there was plenty of Thelonious Monk. There was plenty of Yosel Rosenblatt. Lord knows what he heard that I don't even know he was listening to.
So jazz and liturgical Jewish music.
And lots of stuff in between, you know?
Yeah.
So Noah, how old are you, around 22?
No, I'm actually 24.
24.
Yeah.
You're done with college, right?
Absolutely. I'm done with my undergrad studies. I'm about to begin an MFA at Brooklyn College.
But Brooklyn College, all right.
Another story. Yeah, it's going to be cool. It's at the new Firestein Film School. We got a media scoring program. Going to be with some really amazing musicians.
And what are you going to be studying, music and cinema, or?
Yeah, and music for the purpose of, you know, suiting cinema and scoring, you know. I'm going to be working on a host of media projects that won't just be film, won't just be TV.
Great, because, you know, when you think about how visual media has exploded, when you talk about Netflix and Amazon and just besides all the cable channels.
YouTube, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, people doing their own YouTube channels and videos. You have independent production companies on what used to be just media, not even media companies, but search companies or retail companies. Mm-hmm. So there's going to be this insatiable need, probably already is, for scores. How does that tie into the music you want to do? Why are you going in that direction?
Why do I want to go in that direction? Well, I've always...
A minute ago, you said you weren't going to describe what we're going to visualize in the music. Well, in this case, you got to tie it into what people are seeing.
Absolutely. Well, you know, that goes back to the whole reactive thing. I think for me, you know, I like to make music in so many different ways. I always felt like the opportunity to score allows you to kind of wear it, whatever hat you want to wear, and also allows you to work collaboratively. Because honestly, in the end of the day, no matter what type of music I'm making, it's the collaboration that's going to drive everything. And
so you're collaborating with your dad here.
Exactly.
Do you always watch the video you're scoring? Is it a general feeling like this is the kind of footage we're doing? Or do they have you work before they even edited, where you just say, just give me a general feel?
Well, I'm currently working on a project with a good friend right now. And with that, I was like, you could give me a blank video and I could go top to bottom on it, or I can just give you, you know, I'm just going to make stuff the next week and send it to you, and what fits, fits, and what doesn't fit. And she wanted to go for the latter, and I thought that worked out really well, because I just kind of was thinking about the project she was working on, thinking about maybe what she'd like and what I like, and I think, you know, trying to find that middle ground place.
Now, I want to ask you about your musical journey, Noah.
Yeah.
What instrument did you start playing first and when?
gotta be the piano. That was like year five or something like that.
And when did you pick up the trumpet and why?
Happened fourth grade. I did that because I wanted to play a horn instrument. I wanted to play French horn, but my parents said you can't really improvise on the French horn, so it was trumpet. That's about it. Then after that, fifth grade, started playing the bass.
Wow.
Middle school, then we get in the guitar because, you know, bar mitzvah happened, so it's time for some, a little more intense gear. And at the same time, I got a synthesizer, garage band. And,
so you're a multi-instrument. Some kids grow up learning a lot of languages to speak. You learn a lot of instrumental languages. Was it all intimidating to pick up the bass when your dad is this renowned bass player?
No, I just know I'm not as good as him. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'll just let him be better than me. So, I'm fine with that. Like, I'm fine with having my limits as a musician. And I know that, I'm more interested in composing and creating sound. And that's one of his interests as well. But I'm thinking of the
opposite of limits here. So if you're at a very young age, elementary school, if you're doing bass, you're doing guitar, you're doing piano, you're doing trumpet, you actually are doing the rhythm, the melody, the almost the percussive elements of a song. You're doing all the music. You can do all the music parts yourself. You can basically be Prince and put it all together yourself.
It's, I love Prince. Cool. Yeah. Huge icon.
Now, your father was a pioneer in Jewish music, and doing that along with African-Americans playing Negro spiritual music and combining that and that happened right as you were young. You were a baby, I guess. How old is the Afro-Semitic experience, David?
It's a little younger than Noah.
It's like 22 years or so?
So we're actually celebrating our 20th anniversary of our first performance in January.
So when Noah was 4 years old, you were doing this groundbreaking work with Warren Bird, another jazz musician, where you took Negro spirituals and Jewish liturgical music, reinterpret it with a group of black musicians and Jewish musicians, and drawing on everything from jazz to klezmer to gospel to do these songs that resonate so much. That's why we play them every day here. That's why people go crazy and sort of how much they love it in New Haven, different kinds of settings. How did that affect you, Noah? Were you aware of a Jewish identity early on? What were you thinking of when you became aware of what your father was doing? And do you have any memories of going to an Afro-Semitic concert or rehearsal or listening to one of the discs?
Absolutely. I mean, I always felt like for me, like Afro-Semitic experience, as much as the project of my father, you know, if you think about all the other members of the band, you know, someone like Abu Alan Carter, Warren Bird, you know, Stacey Phillips, all these people are coming from so many different backgrounds, and kind of getting to see a little bit of their world as well as that combined world of my father and theirs. I think that really kind of opened me to new music. Baba David Coleman was a member of the band at that point in time. That, you know, is a hugely influential New Haven music
figure.
Did you
think of yourself as Jewish when you were growing up?
Yeah, absolutely.
Did that tie into what they were doing there, what that meant to be Jewish?
You know, I think that, I was aware of like Theodore Heschel, and I thought, you know, in some ways, I mean, I'm not going to say, I don't think I was saying it as articulately so, but I thought that
I was mixed up Theodore Herzl and Abraham Joshua Heschel.
Yeah,
one was the rabbi who was sort of a spiritual analog in his writings to Afro-Semitic experience, and Herzl was, you know, you dream it, you will dream it, and you get desire.
Oh, yeah, I'm saying, not Herzl, not at all. I'm talking to Heschel. Yeah, it's 100% Heschel. I'm sorry. You know,
no problem.
Yeah, you caught me.
I wasn't trying to catch.
No,
you.
I know.
See where you're going.
Yeah, so no, I'm talking Heschel.
Was on this show before.
Yeah,
and he talked about when he grew up, he went to CBI, the Conservative Shul in Northampton, outside of Amherst. He grew up, and he thought, tell me if I have this right, that you felt, David, that sort of shaped your idea of you both as a Jew and as a musical person, that you were so influenced by the melodies in Shul and the way that played a role in people's worship. That helped you think of your Judaism, your music in one piece together.
It really did at that time, especially it was a progressive synagogue in terms of just having the kids be heavily involved.
Yeah, it's still like that. I visited it recently because my daughter lives in the town.
Nice.
It's a great place.
Yeah, it's still my parents' synagogue.
Yeah, it's a really wonderful. Yeah. They've revived it. A lot of new energy, a lot of young people have Aaronics. So what I was wondering is if Noah had anything similar. Like, so did you go to shul or did the playing of the Afro-Semitic experience around you have this sense of Judaism in music? There's no right answer, and we're certainly not trying to catch you.
I was kidding.
And it's fine if the answer's not at all. Was there any way that being a Jew and Judaism was tied up in how you saw yourself a musical person? You could think of specific places you were or experiences you had where that came into play?
Yeah, I mean, I think specifically like thinking about when I was getting into punk music and thinking about like punk music being a separation from, you know, the traditional rock standard, the machismo, even though that's in punk. But, you know, I started learning about like, oh, Joey Ramone's a Jew, so-and-so is a Jew, like, you know, these different people, they're, you know, coming from the faith and they're putting themselves out in areas where, you know, faith might even be something that's discouraged in that world, but, you know, they're still coming from that community. They're still represented. And I think, you know, just the idea of representing your identity and representing, you know, your family history.
You said you had a bar mitzvah.
Yeah.
Is that at Beth Shalom or?
That was at Congregation Mishkan Israel.
And you say you learned guitar for your bar mitzvah. Tell me why that was and that was about.
Oh, I was saying that after my bar mitzvah, I got a guitar. No, but my father performed his Shavuot service.
Right, that's right.
At my bar mitzvah, and that was actually a really special moment because
so you had your bar mitzvah on Shavuot.
Yeah, dude, it was like June
6th.
My niece
did that too, the giving of the Ten Commandments. That's a great day. Yeah,
that was my portion.
Yeah.
Absolutely, yeah. It was a wonderful, you know, thing to read, and it was also really meaningful to have my father contribute music and Jewish music, and kind of have this service that a lot of my, you know, the people, my guests, my friends at the time, they weren't, you know, they'd been to bar mitzvahs, they hadn't been to a bar mitzvah that had, you know, that amount of ceremony, that amount of, I think, like the practiced meaning in it, you know. I
mean, that was actually not at the party after, but in the service itself.
That was during the service. Yeah, we had a Yisker service. Yeah.
How cool. Yeah, I know Dave has done a lot of work with Yisker and the you've actually performed Yisker services places with the band.
Yeah, I'd actually forgotten that we did part of the Yisker service.
Absolutely. That was a special moment. Yeah.
And Noah, you played guitar at your bar mitzvah. No.
No, I didn't.
Okay. He sang a lot.
Yeah. I was recitating.
And then you went to educational. Now, you grew up in Hamden. Where'd you go to school?
I went to Hamden High School in the Educational Center for the Arts.
Yeah, ECA, the program. You were in music, right? And what role did that have in shaping you as a musician?
I mean, 100%. I mean, that place, the teachers inspired confidence in me. That was some of my initial, you know, greatest collaborators. Andrew Steinzeller is someone I wrote musicals with, and we played in rock bands, and it was also great to start being around people working in other disciplines. And, you know,
and it's amazing how many disciplines you've mentioned.
Yeah.
That, well, you've done jazz, you've done punk, you've done rock, you've done Jewish music. I mean, you've kind of been all around the block.
Yeah, I love music.
All right.
That's all it comes down to. I love music.
So then if we talk about love and music, and you went to Oberlin, right?
Absolutely.
And then you studied something called TMARA, Technology, Music, and Related Arts. What was that at the Oberlin Conservatory?
That's a wonderful program that, yeah, I don't really think anything really exists besides that on the undergraduate level. I came in with about three or four other students, and we were all so varied in what we did, but we all used computers and technology in a way that went beyond just kind of programming beats and whatnot. Not that there's anything wrong with beats.
How do you make the technology make music warmer or fuller rather than colder and more distant?
I mean, I think it's about putting yourself in there. It's about, you know, the fact that, like, I'm not hitting play and not touching it again. You know, I'm physically involved with the computer. And also, like, yeah, I'm recording myself. So I'm not recording, you know, I'm not taking some folder and putting something in there. You know, like, I'm creating this stuff. It's me making it. So I don't feel like I feel very good about it.
And for the non-musically literate who do GarageBand, how does that GarageBand type creation of music compare to what you are doing? Do you consider that music? Do you consider that?
Yeah. I mean, I think people who work on GarageBand, I mean, I know someone who made a record. They just went to the Apple store and used a GarageBand, saved on their USB stick, came back. That's inspiring. You know, like, you think about, like, music education is becoming, like, less and less of an option to people. As, you know, the arts are starting to get cut and cut more and more. And so technology is what people have to go to because they already have their hands on it. So if there's apps being made, if there's anything being made that allows people to creatively express any type of energy, you know, people got to go to that technology and people have to use it. You know, like, people don't have access to trombones and tubas and what have you. Like, that stuff's expensive. But, like, if you have an iPhone, which most people do, you have GarageBand. That's a free app. You can make a song top to bottom on that. And it's going to sound amazing.
David, you must just be compelling to listen to your son, Noah.
Oh, I'm just happy sitting and listening. And
I can't imagine a father being prouder than you must feel this moment. But let's deal the audience into this here at WNHH Radio, your home for community radio at 103.5 FM, Lodge, New Haven, Independent.org. Let's get another taste of the music that David Chevin
and son Noah Chevin will be performing as an electric acoustic duo Wednesday night starting at 7 p.m. at Best Video. Hit it, guys. There's another improvisational number here on High Haven. That was awesome. David Chevin, Noah Chevin on the bass, the trumpet, and what kind of computer you got?
Yeah, we got a 2011 MacBook Pro ready to go.
MacBook Pro here on High Haven and WNHH Radio 103.5 FM. I'm going to do something evil, guys.
What's that?
Naughty. I want to put labels on that music. I was hearing that as jazz funk with overtones of rap in the way you would like with the turntable with the... with the creeping in, and then at the end the kind of atmospherics at the end that you might see in sort of like when more adventurous synthesized rock of the late 70s. Would that be a fair petition? We just throw all labels out the window.
Yeah, I love Brian Eno and I love rap. And my dad likes Brian Eno. And I also like Weather Report. So.
yeah, I was definitely yeah, Weather Report, you know, that one, without a doubt.
Because I like prog music. Like, I didn't grow up on Pink Floyd, and I've never been into them, but I've been more into, like, Yes and King Crimson and
you know, Mahavishnu. I love how it all comes together. But, I guess the challenge for you guys, yeah. And David, you're working with a son who has just swum in every musical water there is how you make it your own and how you make it coherent. And I felt like you did on that piece. I felt like the beat kept going. I felt like I was grounded in a kind of music, and you took me some different places there with your Mac Pro. So way to go, guys.
Thank you. Well, I mean, it's really tricky when you're an improviser, especially, you know, and the term free, I just question it all the time, but the term often is used as free improvisation. There's a tendency to not play groove and not play. And boy, I mean, it's just fun to do that sometimes and then see where
it goes.
What's
wrong with feeling good? I mean, everybody feels good when you groove there.
Please. We have enough reasons not to feel good right now, right?
So, David, before we go, I want to just do a quick checkup with you.
Here. Yes, sir.
So what's the status on a couple of your projects? Afro-Semitic Experience, 20 years you're celebrating. Is the group growing strong? And what are your current plans?
We're coming into an amazing year. I can't tell you everything because I don't know it all, but we just, I guess I have to preface it for some of your listeners. We do a lot of playing at synagogues and houses of worship and
churches.
We
have, so you churches. Howard Avenue.
Yep,
star,
that's
Jacob.
Right. We were at that church on Howard Avenue.
A memorable night.
Oh, thank you. So we're going to be playing a Rosh Hashanah, an Erev Rosh Hashanah service this year in South Orange, New Jersey. It's not on the website yet because we just sealed the deal last week. But we're going to be playing an Erev Rosh Hashanah service. We're going to be playing a Slichot service in West Hartford on whatever night that is, which I think is September 16th. So we have a lot of things coming up. We are talking about a new album, so who knows where that's going to go.
And you and Warbird keep it fresh after 20 years. That's been such a great partnership.
Yeah,
What do you get? Now, I know the trumpet player you added to the group has Saskia. Added a lot. She's really taking you in some new directions.
Yeah, Saskia LaRoe is really just a great trumpet player and really knows how to help us.
She adds really the ruach.
She adds a lot of ruach because she knows how to get the audience going
she
in
does.
Ways that us grumpy old men don't.
That's true. And now New Haven Capella, that's the community. I guess we call it pro-am, right? Professional musicians along
it's,
with
yeah, it's a great
even
group
kids
of
and some
Noah's
grown-ups.
Been in it on and off over the years when he's in town.
And I so mean, what's which that is you that, put out a CD last year. What's the latest with that? Is that project still going?
Oh, yeah. That project will just go until I drop. Right. And then hopefully it'll keep going. That project we're playing like in 2 weeks at the Notes at Noon series at Yale New Haven Hospital. I think
awesome.
Friday the 14th we're playing at noon right in front of Yale New Haven Hospital. So it'll be a nice afternoon klezmer. And I think we're also playing at the Old State House this summer. So
you're keeping traditional music alive with a new twist. And how about Spies of the Balkan? I guess we call that Eastern European gypsy music, whatever.
Yeah, so you can't move every project along all the time. I just got an email, in fact, this morning asking if the Spies would play at a Battle of the Bands in September. So
what Battle of the Bands is that?
It's a fundraiser for the Bar Association.
Uh-huh.
So
how do you
we'll
keep
see.
All these projects going and teach?
Well, as I was just saying, some of them you let go fallow.
Mm-hmm. And then you feel fresh.
You can't push every project all the time.
So then you pick up something with a renewed spirit when the time is right.
And if you notice during the semester, a lot of times the bands aren't playing as much because I just have to really focus on my kids, on my students.
Well, today it's been so great to focus on David Chevin and Noah Chevin. David Chevin, one of the great musicians of our community for decades now, co-founder Afro-Semitic Experience and other great ensembles with his son Noah, who's becoming quite a force in his own right as he heads to NYU to deal on. You'll be listening to a lot of his scores as you watch.
Like yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Thank you.
And in the meantime, 8 o'clock tonight, Wednesday, at Best Video or The Best Video on Whitney Avenue.
If you're going to say that, you're going to say, The Best Video?
The Best Video.
Are you going to The Best Video store?
And they're going to blow your mind, guys. And now, as we always do on this show, and thank you for listening to High Haven,
We're going to take it out with the Afro-Semitic Experience performing I Wish I Knew How It Feels to Be Free. And David and Noah might even add some live additions to the recording. Now we know what it's like to be free. We just got to remember to book our flight. Book it with us all day and all night long here at WNHH, your home for community radio.
We'll be right back.